Hey guys, real quick, before we start the podcast, I just want to thank you all for listening and growing this show. It's been spectacular to see the amount of downloads we've got since we've made the conversion to Red Letters and White Tails. Real quick, if you listen on Apple, go leave us a review or give us leave us an honest review, give us those stars, or if you listen on Spotify, go on, give us a review. I'd really appreciate it. Thanks. Hello, everyone, and welcome to episode 5 of the Red Letters and White Tails podcast. This is your host, Stephen Crawford, and on this week's episode, we're calling ourselves hypocrites a little bit, because we all are, and we're going to go over diving into the Gospel of John, chapter 8, verse 7, and we'll go over a couple other verses that kind of go along with it. And then, really excited for the second half of the podcast as well. I will be joined by Carl Ream from Foxtrot Hunting. Really excited for that conversation. Carl and the Foxtrot guys put out some fantastic YouTube videos, and most of them are all self-filming. So we're going to talk a little bit about the pros and cons and what you need to learn and just A to Z self-filming, and then we're also going to dive into planning and prepping for out-of-state hunts. Here we are in July, and it's that time of year, right? You're getting your trail cameras out, we're getting fired up, planning food plots, we're setting our tree stands. Hopefully we've done a lot of scouting to prep for this time of year, so we're putting our cameras and our stands in the right places. We're doing a bunch of glassing, which we talked about last week. But we're also getting excited because a lot of us, especially that live here in Michigan, are going out of state. So Carl and I are going to talk about prepping for that, what you need to do to prep for that and planning, and also how you go about picking stakes. So Carl and his Foxtrot guys, they hit up multiple states every year, and I'm interested to learn how they decide on where they're going and then, A to Z from there, as to planning, prepping, and hopefully executing and having successful hunts. So really excited for that, the second half of the podcast, but also really excited to dive in to this first part on the faith side, because this verse really calls everybody out. We're all guilty of judging others and, looking at others kind of like, side-eyeing people, even though we should be side-eyeing ourselves. So without further ado, I'm going to get into it, and then we'll get Carl on and finish out this podcast with getting fired up for hunting season, especially if you're going out of state or you're planning on doing some self-filming for the first time this year. Even if you have been self-filming for a long time, he might have some tips and tricks for us to get better, because the productions that they put out on YouTube, check them out. I'll put their YouTube channel in the show notes. But the videos they put out, you would not think are self-filmed. They're really impressive. So excited for that conversation. So with that being said, let's dive in. John chapter 8, verse 7. So I'm going to provide some context here just because we're kind of going over one verse. Before I go into it, the beginning of John chapter 8 starts with Jesus, preaching in the temple courts, and the Pharisees bring a woman to him, a woman they call committing adultery, and kind of drop this woman in front of Jesus. And what the Pharisees are doing here is they're trying to set Jesus up. They're trying to either A, confuse him or trap him, however it may be, because in the law of Moses, which these Pharisees followed to a T, or at least tried to, and they really, they were definitely what you would call rule followers and rule enforcers. In the law of Moses, when a woman is caught committing adultery, she were to be stoned to death. Back in this time. And so they drop this woman in front of Jesus and say, hey, in the law of Moses, and you say you are the law of Moses, the law of Moses tells us that we need to stone this woman. What do you say? And Jesus according to the gospel, is kind of bent down and runs his fingers to the ground and stands up and says this very powerful verse. Here, John chapter 8, verse 7. When they kept on questioning him, he straightened up and said to them, "Let any one of you who is without sin be the first to throw a stone at her." You know, whether you're very educated on the Bible, or you're not so educated, or you're just starting to get into it, this might be a verse that you've heard before. He who is without sins, cast the first stone. So what Jesus is saying here is like, yes, she sinned, but if you're going to stone this woman, whoever here who hasn't sinned, they can throw the first stone. And what ends up happening is, you know, they kind of stand around, and one by one, starting with the elders, the more mature, they start to walk away. And before you know it, it's just Jesus and this woman sitting there. And asks, and you know, I'm getting ahead to other verses. The main point of this podcast is John chapter 8, verse 7. He who was out sin cast the first stone, but I am going to kind of add some context here. Jesus, they all walk away after he says, you know, he who is without sin cast the first stone, and nobody there has never sinned, so nobody throws a stone, and they all end up walking away. And this woman is laying there, and Jesus asks, you know, "Woman, where are they? Has no one condemned you?" And she says, "No, no one, sir." And then he says, "Then neither do I condemn you. Go now and leave your life of sin." Forgives her of her sin and lets her walk. That just is so powerful, because it just shows, like, no matter what the sin is, no matter what you've done in your life, Jesus, if you repent, if you ask for forgiveness, he forgives sin. You're free from sin. Live your life, sin no more. And yes, when he says that, I'm sure this woman walked off, just like when we're all born again, whenever that time is, we're going to sin again. We're human. We're obviously hoping to sin less, because once you're born again, you're a lot more convicted by sin. And hopefully living a life for Jesus is going to lead you to less sin. But when you do screw up, you're free from sin. He is already forgiven. And it's just so powerful. But I'm going to read that verse again. John chapter 8, verse 7. "He who is without sin, be the first to throw a stone at her." So this is something that really, like, because we're all guilty of this, right? Whether it's, you know, judging somebody we work with, somebody we see at the store, somebody we don't even know, or maybe even a friend or a family member who's going through a tough time, and you see them, like, running away from God and doing things that obviously are sinful, but we can't come at it in a place that we're perfect people. Only one perfect human ever walked this earth. And that was Jesus over 2,000 years ago. So this is something that I like to remind myself when I'm getting caught in this kind of conversation with people. You know, you're with a group, whether it's, you know, sitting at home with my wife, or you're with a group of friends and you hear, you know, somebody you all know has gotten into trouble. And really, who are we to judge? There's only one judge. And this, like, when I'm in the middle of these conversations, and, you know, I'm still guilty of it. I still find myself like, why are they doing that? Who are they to be doing that? Why does that person believe that way? And, like, it's just, it's not my place. And it's this verse and another one I'm going to read here, but I'm going to reread it one more time. John chapter 8, verse 7. "Let any one of you who is without sin be the first to throw a stone." So when you find yourself, next time you find yourself in a group setting, or you're sitting down with, you know, your wife, your girlfriend, what family member, or if you're just, you know, driving, if you're by yourself, and something, you know, passes through your mind, or you're looking through social media and you see somebody doing something they shouldn't, let this verse hit you before you go judge that person, because you are guilty of sin as well. You have sinned as well in your lifetime. You might have sinned that day. You might have sinned that hour. You might have sinned 5 minutes before. And before you find yourself in this situation, then who are we to judge that person after we just made a sin ourselves or committed a sin ourselves? So really let that hit home. Another verse that kind of goes, that really goes along with this, that I really like and I wanted to mention, is Matthew, jumping back into the Gospel of Matthew, chapter 7, verse 3. And this is letters in red. This is Jesus speaking. Why do you see the speck that is in your brother's eye, but don't consider the beam that is in your own eye? Or another way that a lot of people know this is, why do you look at the speck of sawdust in your brother's eye and pay no attention to the plank in your own eye? Like, before you go judge somebody, how about you work on yourself, is what Jesus is saying. Before you move on to judge others, look in the mirror. And are you a perfect person? The answer is no. So who are you to judge that person for making a mistake as well? Because we all make mistakes. Often, we're human beings. And I just, I want you to, I mean, I'm still guilty of this, and I repent, and I'm convicted by it now a lot more than I used to be. You know, you know how we were like in high school and college and growing up and into our 20s, like, we judged everybody we saw, like everybody we met. And we had our cliques in school, and you were on a sports team, and you hung out with your sports people, and those people over there and at that lunch table were weird. It's just, as you grow and mature as a Christian, and if you're truly born again, this verse should pop up every time you start to think about, you know, judging somebody else. If you're really convicted by sin, as you mature as a Christian, these two verses, you know, really should jump into your head before you go and talk about somebody else or judge somebody else or correct somebody else. Because more than likely, your life needs some correction as well. So who are you to correct or judge somebody else when you have your own issues going on? And I just don't, like, no matter how much you mature as a Christian and you know, you can get as close as you can to a sinless life, you're still not in a position to judge somebody else. Leave that to somebody else. What you can do is you can be there for them and preach the good word to them and talk about Jesus and how they can be saved. If you see somebody that's need a lot of corrections in their life, is sinning a lot, is running away from God, instead of judging them, be there for them, you know. You're gonna be faced with opportunities in your life to change somebody's life for the better, and introduce them to the gospel, introduce them to Jesus Christ, and hopefully they become born again Christians. And I don't think we'll ever, you're never gonna get to a place where it's right to judge somebody. There's different ways to go about that, to introduce them to the gospel or reintroduce them to the gospel. Like, hey, you used to be here, now you're here. What's going on, man? Let's talk about this. If we need to dive back into this gospel, and if you need to be reminded that Jesus Christ died for you 2,000 years ago, let's talk about that. But it's not your job to judge that person. And it's only your job to help that person. So again, I'm going to read that verse one more time before we end this faith segment. But just so important in life, because we all need corrections. You look in the mirror and we all make mistakes. So who are we to judge somebody else's mistakes? John chapter 8, verse 7. Let any one of you who is without sin be the first to throw a stone at her. If you're standing in that crowd, you're not throwing a stone, right? And I'll read the Matthew chapter 7, verse 3 one more time as well. Why do you look at the speck of sawdust in your brother's eye and pay no attention to the plank in your own eye? You know, we like to judge people for the smallest things. Maybe you saw them, whether it's like a political view or, you know, how they go on living their lives. Or maybe you see them make a small mistake. Like somebody flies by you in traffic going 90 miles an hour. Well, you know what? Before you go on and judge that person, look at yourself in that rearview mirror. And you've probably been in that position before. And making a mistake, not thinking before you act, not thinking before you speak and saying something you shouldn't have. Remind yourself, put yourself in that picture, put yourself in that situation, in that crowd of people listening to Jesus, and that adulterer, that woman who commits adultery, is thrown in front of Jesus and yourself, and you have that stone ready in your hand to judge her. This woman needs stoned to death. That's what the law of Moses says. But Jesus, the Son of God, says, hey, you've sinned. Have you sinned? If you haven't sinned, you can throw that stone. Every single one of us will drop that stone and walk away. Just remember that. So really, really enjoyed that faith segment. Those are two just extremely powerful verses and something we have to remind ourselves constantly and live by daily and pray about daily. To become a brother in Christ and to show love and not hate, and show love and not judge. Just remember that. So that being said, we're going to move on to the outdoor deer hunting section of the podcast. We're going to talk about self-filming your hunts, and we're going to talk about prepping for your out-of-state hunts this year, and hopefully you'll learn a thing or two. Carl will be good. So thanks for listening. We'll jump into that. All right, we're back with Carl Ream. Thanks for joining, man.
Thanks for having me. Happy to be on.
For sure. I'm happy to have you on. So before we'll get into our discussion, but how long ago did you guys start making videos, Foxtrot?
So it's been 3 years now. It was, you know, 2020, I guess, what we started then, in the middle of all that, just decided
kind
to start
of a
filming.
Good time to start, too, because you got more time on your hands. Like, were you guys working from home a lot that year?
We were.
Yeah. That's nice.
So working from home a lot, and then had trips planned, and it was kind of just, something else to try out. And
yeah.
Been hunting for so long, and it was just, we decided to dive into it.
For sure.
Year.
Sweet, man. And then you guys, had success on camera, right away that year, right? Because you guys, was that the year you went up north? And killed a buck.
Yeah.
And then you guys went, was that the year you went to Kansas?
The first year we didn't go to Kansas.
Okay.
That was year two. But
gotcha.
Yeah, the first year, a few weeks into filming, we were hunting our mutual friend Jack, at their place up there. And I had shot a buck, and then another buck had coming right behind me.
I remember watching that.
So it was back-to-back bucks. Yeah, and it was just unbelievable.
That's incredible.
And, you film too, and you know how hard it is to get bucks on camera. So
next
that's
to
all happened and come together. It was awesome.
It was that does not happen. That might not ever happen again. You know what I mean? It's incredible. So before we get into the self-filming and the Foxtrot portion, just give the listeners a little background on yourself. I got to know you through Jack, who's been on the podcast multiple times, but how'd you get into hunting? Have you been traveling and hunting for a long time, or is this something that you just got into when you guys started Foxtrot?
Yeah, been hunting for a while. The standard or the more typical way of getting into hunting, my dad is a big hunter, avid hunter, so grew up going with him and, just getting into hunting with him right away.
Yeah.
But it was funny, though, through high school and, college with sports and stuff and there were other things, I didn't actually hunt a ton through high school in those years. And then, after college, that's when I really started getting
really
more into it and going on the out-of-state trips. And my dad had gone on out-of-state trips for years with his brother, my uncle.
Yeah.
And, so they had this long-standing tradition. So it was kind of easy to just kind of,
fall right into that. Because you guys they have a tradition of going to Ohio, correct?
They do.
Yeah.
Yeah. So they've been going to Ohio for, longer than I've been alive. They've been going down there. So it's cool to go back down there with them and,
for sure,
all the familiar spots.
So
there's some family history down there. That's cool. And then we branched out to other states.
You know? They're going to Ohio way before it was like cool to go to Ohio. That's happened like in our lifetime where it's been like, you know, you never, when I was growing up, I have the same story you do. Like in high school, like I grew up hunting all the time with my dad, but high school, you know, you're busy with sports. I played college baseball. I remember every year in fall ball just like hating it. I'd so much rather it would be like a beautiful October morning and I'd be at practice and just like, I can't wait to be done with school so I can hunt, you know? But yeah, we like when I got done with college, that's when I really like started like picking it up. Like I remember the first year out of college, I probably went on like probably 120 sits in the fall just to make up for all the lost time.
That's amazing.
Yeah. And then like 20, I didn't really jump onto the traveling hunting until 2015. There was like a couple years between when I graduated college and when I could afford to pay for an out-of-state tag. But I started going to Ohio too, because like right in that like 2014-15 was like when it really got popular, you know. So you guys are still doing that, right?
We are, but we've branched out to other states and kind of been rotating around.
So okay.
In the last few, like, you know, now I've kind of doing the family trip still with my dad and brothers and uncle and then a few other friends. And then,
yep.
And you know, Derek goes to that too, mm-hmm. but then also been doing some friend trips as well. But yeah, the family trip, it's been cool. We've done Indiana a few times. We did nice. Iowa a few years ago, which is an amazing experience.
Yeah. And we'll talk about that a little bit.
So yeah, it's been fun. It's been cool to branch out. Cause you know, go to the same spot all the time. You get in your habits and
for sure.
Hunt the same spots and all of a sudden the week goes by. So, you know, it really does. It's good for you to go to new
to branch
and
out,
challenge yourself, and it makes you a better hunter.
Yeah,
you know?
Absolutely. So, we'll get into that here soon because I want to talk about that, like how you guys have decided to rotate, what your decision, like how that thought process came to be. But let's jump, like everybody, I'll put Foxtrot's YouTube channel in the show notes, but it's a, like you guys put on like a really good, like it's a very nice production, especially for mostly self filming, right? So let's talk about that a little bit. Was 2020 the first year you started filming?
Yeah.
Wow.
So, much appreciated on the shout out. But so that's when we started, and it's cool because, you know, for us too, like I'm the longtime family Christian hunter, and then Derek, who I do Foxtrot with.
Yep.
He didn't grow up hunting, not in his family.
Oh,
and
really?
I got him into hunting. So it's been cool to like see him
grow up. That's a lot of fun.
It is.
Yeah.
It's so cool. And, you know, so it's been great. He's got the, you know, personality where he dives in 100%. And mm-hmm. now, you know, he teaches me way more than I teach him.
Really? But
the cool thing is, like, with us doing Foxtrot together is he wouldn't have hunted probably without me. But then I never would have filmed without him because he was the one that had some experience filming and
okay.
doing some other stuff with, you know, I had cameras and
yeah.
Actually had like a different YouTube channel that he was doing for music stuff.
Oh,
like,
wow.
You know, so he was doing
that background. Yep.
He was already doing that. So that's what helped a ton because the YouTube world was foreign to me besides
for
watching.
For sure. And video editing is a monster in itself.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So that's where he like was getting a new camera and selling his old one. I'm like, well, I'll buy your old one. You know,
yeah.
He gave me a, you know, family discount, I'm sure. And, so I started out with his old camera. And so we both had cameras, both self-filming. And then that's just kind of how it was born at
nice.
That point. And,
yeah.
You know, and it's been cool. It's been
I had so... I so do you ever miss not having a camera?
Yes.
Yeah, yes. I've always... So like... Yeah, I bought a new camera just like 2 years ago with all the intentions of bringing it back out there. And I really do want to start filming again more. I had to take like a mental break from it. I filmed, like I was on that Michigan Whitetail Pursuit Team for 8 years. And like I had so much fun. And what I miss about it the most is just reliving the experience, right? Like I can look at a buck on the wall and relive that experience in my mind, but be able to share that with others. Because usually, like, when you're telling a story to somebody in person, yeah, they're grasping it, but they're not getting that full, you know, story of what everything looked like. And being able to, like, replay the footage after a shot, being able to, like show somebody, like tell them the story, but then show them the story. It's a different experience. It's just a lot of fun. I miss it.
It is. Yeah, it's a balance. There's the pros and cons that we can get into on that.
Yeah.
Because that's exactly right. Like, you know, I've forgotten something a few times where I forget my camera arm or forget, to charge my battery, so I don't have my camera out. And it's kind of nice. It's kind of like a little break.
Yeah.
All right, now I'm focused on only what I'm out here to do is hunt. And so it is. It's like, it is tough, but once you capture those memories, it's so worth it, like you said.
It is.
You
know, it really is. And I almost, like, I remember the first buck I shot off camera 3 or 4 years ago. First buck I'd shot off camera in a long time. And everybody's like, do you have the footage? Do you have the footage? I'm like, shoot, man, I don't. So before we get into pros and cons, like, what's your setup? Because you guys do a lot of, like, mobile hunting on the road. Are you a saddle hunter?
I am. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. So saddle hunter. Derek and I both saddle hunter. We both run a Latitude setup. We love them.
Same.
And really love the saddle setup because we do, you know, mostly hanging hunts on public and, you know, some permission stuff too, but mostly public. So, you know, that's obviously great for that. But then for filming, honestly, it's hard to beat the saddle with the camera arm. And we should do a video at some point with, like, my setup.
Because, for sure.
You know, just the convenience of having the camera right in front of you as you're bow hunting and it's right there to swivel around with the saddle, it makes a big difference.
I have some questions about that because I've gotten saddle hunting just recently. I've saddle hunted the last 2 years.
Okay.
So I've never really saddle hunted with the camera equipment. Does it limit the trees you can get into? Because that's what's nice about saddle hunting is, like, it's not like hunting with a climber or even with, like, a lone wolf. Like, you can get into a lot of different types of trees at a lot of different heights. But, like, when you have that camera equipment, you have that camera arm, do you have to be more conscious of the kind of trees and like, the whole layout of where you're hunting, how you're picking out which tree you're going to hunt in?
A little bit, but it's never been like a big limiter on trees, I would say. Like, you know, if it's a split limb tree, it might limit you a little bit just based on, you know, because the camera angle versus the shot angle, trying to get both of those things. But
yeah,
I don't think about that too much.
Okay.
You know, because typically when you're hanging, as long as, you know, especially with the saddle, because you need, you know, a pretty decent setup between your platform and your bridge, you know, to make it work. So with it in between there, it doesn't really limit.
Okay. Your tree, that's good to know. Yeah. So with what kind of camera arm do you rock?
So I've got the Lone Wolf pocket arm.
Nice.
So I started out with the muddy camera arm and did that for the first few years, and it makes a world of difference
to a pocket arm.
So, like, I do that one, and Derek does the fourth arrow. I forget that they're three arm.
They just came out with a new camera arm that, like, they catered to saddle hunting. I'd have to look it up. I'll put it in the show notes if this intrigues anybody to start trying it, because I know, like, I know quite a few guys that filmed their hunts and ditched the filming when they became a saddle hunter because they felt like it was too much. And, like, you're saying that's not. You know, it's like, it's all about, like, your setup, what you're bringing out. Like, I'm sure that pocket arm helped a lot. I have, like, my camera arm is, like, it's a really nice fourth arrow camera arm, but it's a lot to lug around. You know, it's sizable.
Yeah.
And I've always been considering downsizing for the saddle hunting. But, yeah, we'll have to talk about that. I'll have to put that in the show notes of what camera arm that fourth arrow just came out with, because I got to look that up. But anyway, so pros and cons. Let's talk about that, because if you're thinking about getting into filming, it's so fun, right? Like we just said, for so many reasons. But let's start with the cons.
Yep.
And then we'll go to the pros.
Yeah, so, I like it. Yeah, there's definitely more pros and cons, I think.
Yeah.
You know, but or else I wouldn't be doing it. But
like, what's the biggest hurdle? If somebody were asking, what's the biggest hurdle you have with filming your hunts out of a saddle?
I mean, hurdle wise, like, to start out, I mean, it's somewhat of a, you know, financial investment.
Yeah.
You can start as cheap as you want, though. So I think, honestly, nowadays, if somebody wants to try it, I think someone should try it on their phones first. I mean, phone cameras nowadays are pretty darn good. And my younger brother, Brett, actually films with his phone.
Does he?
And yes. You know, we put some of that stuff. We do some videos with that in on our channel even. And does you know, you sometimes can't even tell. Like,
really?
Wow. You just can't zoom in. As yeah. much. You know, that's the biggest thing. And my uncle does, and my dad, and it's cool to like. They put some phone footage out there, which is great. You can like still use them. So like,
for sure.
If you're starting out, I would say like, yeah, get a cheap camera arm and use your phone just to try it a few times to see if you like it, because that's like the biggest thing. Because then the next step is just how much you have to carry in, you know, and how much you're lugging in. It really does dramatically increase the amount you're packing in.
For sure.
And you know, the saddle hunting light mentality, it's great, but you're quickly adding bulk and weight right away. So once you step up, like we use, you know, DSLR cameras so we can, you know, zoom and it's all 4K footage and all that stuff.
Uh-huh.
And it's not like an insane amount of weight, but it's just bulky.
It all adds up and it's bulky. There's no like easy way to transport it, right? It's going to take up space. It adds a little bit of weight and also just adds to the everything you have to remember. And you're going out in the woods, right?
Yes. Yeah. Yes. It's easy. I mean, you got your camera, you got, you know, Derek and I both carry two different lenses, which is a little bit over the top, you know, not required, but as we continue to try to get better footage, you know, so you got, you know, your camera, your lenses, your camera arm, your batteries, your microphone, like there's a lot. And then also use a GoPro, hook a GoPro to my tether. And so that's like the point of view.
Yeah.
And then have my camera arm set up to try to get the deer footage. So we have both those going on. So it's that's the biggest con, I would say. It's just the lugging the gear and the time that it adds setting it up and just, you know, remembering it all.
Yeah, and like, was it an adjustment going to that? Like, I remember thinking back in my like days. And a lot of the time, like when I used to film my hunts, most of the time it wasn't like mobile hunting. I was climbing a ladder stand, I was getting a tree stand. But now, like, yeah, you have your saddle, you have your sticks. Do you have to give yourself a lot more time in the especially in those morning hunts? Like, get out there extra early kind of deal?
Yeah, it takes an extra 10 to 15 minutes to set up that stuff.
Yep.
And so, yeah, I try to factor another 15 minutes. So it's not terrible because I like to be up in the tree pretty early anyway.
Yeah.
So, and as long as you know, I'm moving pretty slow and quiet. So, it adds a little bit of time for sure. But it's not awful.
No,
but
it adds
up.
Yeah. Do you practice before season at all? Like, do you like kind of like time yourself getting up in a tree? I mean, I guess now you've been doing it for 3 years, so you're a little bit more used to it. But would you recommend if somebody's going to get into filming their hunts this year and they're hunting out of a saddle or doing any kind of mobile hunt, would you recommend, like, hey, before the season, you know, go out to some public land, go in your backyard and work on that. See how long it takes you to set up your stuff and get settled.
Definitely. Yeah, I would say just because it does take more time than you think, especially right away. Like, once you get it down, it quickens up. But I think so. But then also just honestly figuring out your preferred, like, setup overall. You have to practice that
for
with
sure
the gear you have, because you know some certain camera arms different than others, and you know some you might set up and then realize, oh, I can't draw right here for this shot, and that's
very
the last
good
thing
point
you want is to limit that camera arm limiting a shot. So
you
know, a lot of different iterations, and you know, most guys do similar things depending on what kind of camera arm it is. But that's, and just the comfort too, of just the height and where it's at on the tree and just getting it set up is big. So definitely good to practice that for those reasons.
That's a good point. I look back and even when I was hunting at those ladder stands where I knew where I was going, I knew how to set everything up. I remember there was a couple instances where, like, you know, I didn't do the whole like preparation where I'm like pulling my bow back at every angle, or at least like put like moving my bow around, and like it caused a few mistakes in my day. Of like, I remember one time I had a 9-point like pretty much running into me. It's like November 2nd. Haunts me. This 9-point's like running into me, and I pick up my bow, and when I pick up my bow right away, the top of the limb hits the camera arm. It's like ting. And he just stops in his tracks, whips around. I'm like, oh my gosh. And that's it. And it's times like that where like Like, when you're in that moment, it's like, why do I film my hunts? You know what I mean? Because that deer is so dead without that camera there. But do you feel like anything else that you like, if somebody's like either learning to get, like trying it for the first time or have been doing it for a few years and are trying to kind of like perfect it, anything else that you'd like recommend? Or is there any other hurdles that you feel like you've had to jump with filming hunts?
I think like two other quick things would be like, one, if you're gonna edit and put videos together, it and do it yourself, it really helps to edit to learn like what you need to actually put together a good video. Like,
yeah.
You know, the amount of B-roll you need or things you should just take quick videos of to make the story all come together. Like, mm-hmm. that's what really separates, I think, you know, the really, really, you know, good to great videos, maybe, on just having that extra footage. And just so like, but the more you edit, the more you do it, the more you know kind of what shots you need and all that.
So, yeah, that's actually a really good point. I stopped you if you keep going, man.
So that's like the one thing that, like, you know, you learn over time, just like some of those little shots that if you're trying to put, you know, actually a YouTube video together,
yeah.
or a film together for something else, then those are big to make the story.
For sure.
But if you're just filming to have the shot on camera and to have it, you know, obviously don't worry about that.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
That's a big thing. And then the other thing I would say is just like sticking with it. It's, which we're all guilty of it. You watch these YouTube channels and like, oh my gosh, this happened to this guy. This is crazy. But like,
yeah.
you know, every single time you're hunting, you're doing this and you're setting up all this stuff. You're doing the pre-hunt interview.
Yep.
You're taking this B-roll and then you don't see a deer, you know? So there's like
Trust.
The amount of like useless footage that we have, like is so.
Fill a ton of SD cards. Yeah.
So it's like, if you're going to do it, stick with it, because the you know, the one time you don't bring it or don't do it, that's when, of course, something crazy is going to happen. And so it just takes persistence of just, you know, every single time you do it, and then you just got to laugh about it. And like,
I like that a lot. Yeah. I remember back in my day, like, if you skipped one hunt, like, I'm not going to film this hunt. I just need a break. It's a lot easier to make that break, go from like one hunt to 10 hunts. It's like, it's not as much work. That was, and yeah. And then back to your B-roll, when I look back at our Michigan Whitetail Pursuit, and like, I thought we did a pretty good job for videos back in, you know, that day. It was a way different time. But there's so much, like, if you're really looking to like separate yourself in production, there's so many whitetail videos on YouTube. It's like you kind of like have to, if you really want like a lot of views and really to get your name out there, you have to have like good B-roll and a great production and a great story. Because if you type in like Michigan whitetail deer video on YouTube, and you know, you could sit on there for a full year clicking page, you know. So it's a really good point, because I remember when I used to do like some more like B-roll stuff, and I look back at those videos now, it's like, oh man, that was cheesy. And then I see like videos now, like your guys' videos, you don't even know it's B-roll, right?
Yeah.
And it's that kind of stuff. So that's a really good point. And one thing that I'll add that I remember is, it wasn't really a con, but something I had to like teach myself was to be, you have to be the cameraman up until the shot. You know, that's why I like remember telling myself, like, yeah, I'm a hunter, I'm hunting, but if I want really good footage, if I'm self, obviously this is if you're self filming, I have to be a very good cameraman up until I'm ready to make the shot. Because it's like, I'm sure you've had it. Like, I remember like the first buck I ever self filmed myself kill, it actually made it really easy for me. It walked in really slowly, but there were still like 7 or 8 times where I'd put the camera there and it'd walk through the screen.
Yeah.
Put the camera there and walk through the screen. And it just kind of like taught me, like, you know, like you have to have a cameraman's mindset up until that moment of the shot. I don't know if you go by something similar.
Oh, I relate to that a lot. Actually, that reminds me. That's probably one of the biggest cons that I have of it. You know, you've heard people say, like, you have to shoot the deer twice when you're filming. But that's probably one of the biggest cons is I think a lot of people feel this way, like, I definitely feel less lethal when I'm filming as well. And I think it's affected me. And there's a few stories that I have, like, you know, I won't go into them, but like you said, where, you know, deer's coming in, this and that happened. and something happened with the camera gear, or I just made a mistake because I'm thinking about the camera.
Yeah.
Like, that is so frustrating.
It is.
So that's probably the biggest thing, is I do think it does impact your effectiveness as a hunter.
For sure.
With that distraction. Like, my dream is to tag out early one season and just film people. I love the filming.
Yeah, same. Of
it. And I've filmed a few people, you know, here and there when I get the chance to, and I enjoy it.
But yeah,
to do them both together is challenging.
It
takes away from your ability a little bit.
For sure. And I remember there were a couple times also in my day, kind of vice versa, where like most of the time I was the cameraman up until the time to make a shot. But sometimes, like, I remember I had this giant buck running at me in Ohio, that buck right there.
Okay. Yeah.
I had that buck running up to me, and it was coming quick, and I was like, screw the camera. I'm a hunter. And I killed that buck because of it. But if I would have had that footage, I to this day, I wish I would have just filmed it and had that footage. But it is what it is.
Yeah. No, Derek and I say the same thing all the time. It's like, hey, you completing this is the most important thing.
Yeah.
Like, don't worry about the footage. If you get the footage, it's bonus.
That's a bonus.
You can't, and like, you'll see that in our videos and a lot of guys' videos, I think, where
we're
getting good footage of the deer or the buck, but then once it's
kill time,
we zoom out and we're guessing where they're going to go based on the trail they're on. We're zooming out, putting it over there, and then just we're hunting then, right? And like, if we miss the shot, we miss the shot. And you'll see that if you watch our videos too, where it's like, and then you can edit and you zoom in and stuff.
Yeah.
Like, after the fact, where we're like, I'd rather have the shot in frame somehow, but sometimes it doesn't happen.
Doesn't happen. And you know, that's what's crazy about that hunt you had up at Jack's place, is how perfectly that worked out. You know what I mean? That just popped in my mind. It's like, you know, you're so upset, like, get that shot, kill that buck, but it just all worked out there.
Yeah.
So let's transition to, let's talk about a few, like, pros. I guess we didn't really, like, because there are a lot of pros. Top, let's say, if somebody were to ask you, like, what are your favorite three, like, top three reasons you film your hunts?
Okay. Yeah, that's really good. We had a lot of cons, I feel like.
wasn't cons. It was more like hurdles if you get over those, if you get over that hurdle, like I love that way you said, like, just keep at it. Just keep at it, because that one time it's going to come together and it's going to be, you know, you'll be able to watch that footage the rest of your life.
Yeah. Exactly. So I think, my top three pros of it for me are, you know, number one is easily just documenting the memories. And like you talked about, it is so cool just to have those memories with, you know, with whether it's hunting with family or hunting with friends or just by yourself, even just to have that story captured. And I just value time at deer camp with buddies and with family and with my dad, especially, and uncle, and, you know, like, having those memories captured is so cool. Like,
for
you said, the story is great, but then if you can actually document some of it, it's amazing.
It is.
You know, I'm guilty of going back and watching some of our videos
because
it's just fun. Or a hunting camp, you know, years later, we go, hey, let's watch Ohio in 2019. That was a great, you know.
Like, how fun is it to, like, we can relive these stories in our mind, but how awesome is it that we're capable and you're able to relive them and actually see them?
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah. Exactly. So that's the number one thing for sure. You'd probably say the same on that being
absolutely one. Even the bloopers, like, even though they suck in the moment, like, looking back at them, it's kind of like you laugh at yourself and be like, it's still a good memory, you know, hunting memory. So absolutely, the looking back at the memories is by far the number one.
And I would say number two for me would be having the shot on camera is so valuable. Just knowing, you know, we're all guilty, me especially, and other, like, of blacking out during the shot because just the buck, you know, the buck fever and adrenaline pumping through.
Yep.
Like, I think this happened, but I'm not sure. And, like, having the footage for especially a bow shot, to knowing how good the hit was, to decide, you know, we're constantly reviewing that to decide how long do we wait till we track and have a good feel before we track. And that's been just so valuable to have.
Invaluable. It was like, I look back at those, and I like last year, like, I don't know if you listened to an episode a couple episodes ago, but I had a a terrible bow season last year. I wounded a couple deer, and I just think if I would have had those on camera, like, I pushed these deer. And if I would have, probably if I would have had the shots on camera, I would have changed my mind and wanted to go after them, you know? Because I do, you black out. You don't know exactly where, like, you think I hit him here. I think I saw the entrance here. I think I saw him, like, disappear behind that tree.
Yeah.
But, like you said, you're blacked out, and just having all that footage to look back on is everything.
It's huge.
Can be
it's
the difference huge. Between a found deer or a, you know, a deer that is gone, you'll never see. You know what I mean?
Exactly. Like, the biggest one for me was Iowa. I shot a really good buck in Iowa and did not recover it, unfortunately. Yeah. But had the footage, could tell it was, you know, too high up and not a fantastic shot, but still had a good chance. And
yeah.
So it does give you some, like, assurance that, you know, obviously the bow hunter will make a good lethal ethical kill every time. Yeah. But
just doesn't happen.
Gives you some reassurance, like, okay, that deer is walking today.
Yeah.
So obviously that's the worst case scenario. We don't want that.
No.
But it happens. Like, I mean, my dad this year shot a great buck in Ohio. And, you know, not filming.
Yep.
And he thought, he was so confident that it's a dead deer. And we, you know, waited a few hours, went in to track it.
Nothing.
Like, and it was just, you know.
And he doesn't, like, you don't know. Like,
yeah.
That's my thing. Like, I look back at some of the shots I made last year. I'm like, I hope and pray they're still alive. I know one made it. I had them on camera. But other than that, like, I was like, you don't know. Like, yeah. I don't know where I hit that deer. You know, it's unfortunate. And that's why, like, filming is awesome. Like, that part of filming is a very close second, you know, to the memories, is like being able to go back and relive that shot.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. That's huge. So I think the third thing, and this kind of like segues from that, because yeah. You learn not only shots, but I think the third thing is learning as a hunter and learning for what you do and what the deer do, honestly.
Yeah.
Or, you know, whatever film, it's not deer, turkeys, or elk, or
meat. For sure.
Talking white-tailed deer mostly. But I think I've learned a lot from going back, you know, as I'm editing or reviewing footage, just picking up things.
Yeah.
Either I do, like, one is movement, you know, realizing, like, oh my gosh, I can't believe I moved that much at that moment.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
And it's sometimes hard in the footage because, like, maybe the buck's head was behind a tree or something. Yeah, but, like, yeah.
But still.
Like, yeah. Seeing that, you don't realize it until you see yourself, and you're like, oh my gosh, like, I'm moving too much right there.
Yep.
So, like, that's, like, but not only that, but then, like, you know, the shots you make, but then also just, like, rewatching the situation to see, okay, should I, like, say you don't get a shot at a buck, yeah. Like, should I have played that differently? Was there a shot opportunity that was, you know, maybe a little bit of a stretch, and yeah. Now, you know, I'm waiting for the perfect shot, but was there something that he did at 42 yards that, oh my gosh, like, he was quartering away right there. Maybe I could have
changed the outcome. Like, yeah.
So that, but then also just seeing how they react and what they do, you know, and like
watching deer behavior.
Yeah. Just watching behavior and reading what they're doing, especially in areas that you know and scout and have trail camera footage on, and, you know, areas you think you know what the deer are going to do, and then actually seeing what they're going to do and then be able to rewatch that. It's a learning experience.
For sure. I miss that so much about it, is because, like, I'll try to make all the mental notes I can when I'm in a tree stand. I know some guys, like, literally, like, take a notebook out there with them. Mm-hmm. But I have in the past. I don't. But, like, you can only make so many mental notes and remember everything. I remember going back and watching footage and, like, learning deer behavior, you know? Like, watching, like, a doe and watching her when she knows there's a buck around, how is she acting? You know what I mean? And, like, watching two bucks, like, during the rut, like, how are they reacting to does in the area and other bucks in the area and stuff you really don't notice when you're hunting, especially when you're filming. Like, you're always looking through, like, a little screen, and you're not getting everything. But, like, when you go back and watch the footage on, like, a big screen or a computer, it's like, oh, I missed that. You know, let me, like, I'll jot that down, because, like, yeah, I learned so much just watching deer, you know, deer behavior. So I agree 100%. And I think those are three reasons why everybody should try picking up a camera and doing this. You have a phone.
Yeah.
Like, don't say you don't have a camera. You have a phone. And there's so many unique ways now that weren't available even, like, 10 years ago. All these innovations with camera arms, all these innovations with like being able to like put your phone like on your bow. I mean, you can go to Facebook Marketplace and look at GoPros. They're not very expensive. You can get like a used GoPro that's in great shape for $150.
Right.
You know, so yeah, it can get pricey if you really like. I spent a pretty penny on the camera I bought a couple years ago, but that was after years of using, you know, like a 10-year-old camera. So yeah, everybody's got a camera. If you want to give it a try, I highly recommend it. Anything else you wanted to say before we kind of segue to some out-of-state hunts?
No, I think that's great. I think I would say the same. It's worth doing and trying. So
for sure.
Give it a go.
And go watch the Foxtrot videos, right?
Yeah.
If you want to learn a thing or two, it's pretty awesome. So let's... Speaking of like filming and Foxtrot, you guys have been traveling quite a bit over the past couple years. So name a few of the states. I know you've done Idaho elk a couple times, but like whitetail wise, where have you guys been the past, you know, 5 years?
Yeah, so the past 5 years we've done, and some of these we did two in a year, you know.
Yeah.
So Ohio, Indiana, Kansas, Iowa, and I mean Michigan as well.
Yeah.
But yeah, so those five states really the last. So some of those we've done repeat.
Okay.
Some of those just one time. Iowa was just once, you know, obviously.
Yeah, I mean, points and all I wish that, we could repeat that. Yeah.
Yeah. So yeah, those are the five we've done, and it's been really, really a good spread. Which you've done some of those, and then
yeah,
you've done Wisconsin and
yep. So I did Wisconsin last year. I've never been to Wisconsin. Have you been to Wisconsin?
I have not.
Like
no.
I know Jack killed that giant there a couple years ago, but I've never been there. It's an $80 tag. So last year I had like a couple days in September, and I was like, for $80, for 4 days, I'll go do it. And so yeah, I did Wisconsin. I've done Missouri. Still waiting on Iowa. I got 4 points now.
Nice.
Yep. So getting there. And then I did Nebraska in 2019. I've done Ohio multiple times. I've done Indiana. I'm curious to hear about your Indiana hunt. I had a rough experience there. Just like, I think I was just in the wrong area. Bunch of Amish. Just so many hunters. But yeah, I'm trying to think where else. So yeah, Ohio, Indiana, Wisconsin, Missouri. I think those have been my whitetail trips the last handful of years.
Okay.
But... yeah, last year actually, did I do a... yeah, because that's another reason. Last year I went to Wisconsin because I was looking at my deer season. I had that... I went to Montana on an elk hunt with my dad in the first week of November. So that was like... that kind of like shot any chance of going on a deer hunt. So I was like, I want to do something, you know? But yeah, so how do you guys go about like picking what states? Because you said like your family goes down to Ohio, but you've kind of flip-flopped between Indiana and Ohio. Where are you going this year?
So we're going to Indiana this year.
Okay.
That's my only whitetail trip this year is Indiana.
Okay, it is. Okay.
And then I'm doing Idaho with my dad.
Oh, you are. So nice.
I have a mule deer tag. He has an elk tag.
Sweet.
So split tag trip.
That's fun.
That'll
be sick.
So those are my only two trips. We were hoping to go to Kansas, but we didn't draw.
You didn't
draw. Getting harder and harder to draw there.
Yeah.
Yeah, I've done two states, like two out-of-state trips the last, or actually I did three, including two whitetail out-of-state trips.
Because you've done the, years. Like you build up your PTO to like where you just go for 14 straight days, right?
Yeah.
So fun.
My work probably hates it, but I just go two straight, rutcation all out. So
I'm in sales. I have been since I got out of college. And like, if you look at 9 years, my worst month every year is November because I don't work much.
Focused on other things.
Yes.
Yeah.
So you guys, so how do you guys go about which states you're going to hunt? Because I'm interested to learn this because, you know, there are a lot of options still to go pick up a non-resident tag. And I guess options are getting more limited and, like, obviously, like, we'd all love to go to Iowa every year, but that's not the case. So how do you guys, like, go about, like, all right, this is what we're going to do this year?
Yeah, so we kind of have, I mean, there's always more states we want to hunt.
I think
we've got, like, a long list, like you said, just of other ones we want to continue to hit.
Yeah.
But, you know, did Ohio for years and years, and honestly, just because we had, you know, the same rental we did down there that kind of
fell through.
So then we kind of, like, you know, rental situation wasn't great. So we said, let's check out some other states. So we did some research on, you know, looking at the data that's out there on, you know, buck kills and harvest yep. data and hunter pressure data, and, you know, looked at, we liked, and honestly, location as well is, you know, for us, a lot of us from Michigan, but my brother comes up from Atlanta, then my uncle comes from South Carolina and his buddy. So, like, you know, ideally something in between Michigan and then the Southeast.
Because Ohio is probably perfect for that, yeah.
Exactly, it was kind of split. So Indiana was kind of a split for us.
Yeah.
But also, too, like, we were familiar, like, we're hunting hill country in Ohio.
Yep.
So Indiana, we were in hill country there. So it was cool to, you know, kind of do the same tactics, but a new area. But
for sure.
And for our trips, too, with having so many guys, we like big woods as well. So just having a plethora of public land available is really big for us. So kind of keying in on areas that, like, okay, there's not going to be any issues with us, you know, overlapping each other.
Yep.
And we can all do our own thing. So that's a big thing for us. But, and then, I mean, Iowa's just, you know, the obvious, I guess, on just, you know, you got to wait it out. And always, you know, lifetime dream hunting there.
For sure. And you guys have a good, so the, where was I going with that? So, are you always hunting public?
Yes.
You are? Yeah. Okay.
On out-of-state trips.
Yeah, that's what I mean. Yeah.
So, we are. Yeah, always public, always. So, Derek has done some door knocking. So, some of his stuff is on, you know, which is tough. In 1 week, you know, you got to choose. Like,
it's like, do I hunt or do I knock?
It's a gamble, mm-hmm. you know. We're all scouting the first few days. And, you know, Derek sometimes has knocked on doors the first 2 days. And
yeah.
It's a gamble. Like, because it for could sure. be, you know, nobody gives you permission and then he's got 2 days burned. But
yeah.
It's worked out for him and it takes a lot of volume. You got to go through a lot of people.
I was going to say, there's no, that the days of knocking on 10 doors and getting a couple of permissions are over. It's like, if you're going to do it, you better knock on 40 doors. You might get lucky.
Honestly. Yeah. Yeah. So yeah, 99% of it is public on
nice.
Most trips.
Sweet. Yeah. So because it's public, what are you guys doing to, like, when you guys have a spot that, like, you know you're going to be going, what are you guys doing in the off season to kind of, like, prep? Because you guys have had a lot of success, like, not always filling tags, but you guys do have a lot of encounters. So what are you guys doing in the off season to kind of, like, prepare yourselves for that hunt?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, a lot of e-scouting as a standard. But if we're going to a new area, especially, not so much if we're going to a repeat area, but if we're going to a new state, a new area, we always try to do a scouting trip before.
Good. Like, that's,
you know, we did it for, you know, multiple states, did it for, you know, actually, you know, all the new states we came across, we did a late winter scouting trip or a early fall scouting trip, you know.
Oh, you've done both. Okay. That was my next follow-up question is, like, what time of year are you guys putting boots on the ground?
Yeah, so for a few I've done, like, you know, we're doing March, but like for Indiana we did September, like early September.
Did
so, which is nice, honestly. Like,
yeah.
if you can, it's tough to do closer to season, but if you can do it, then it really does help just to see the fresh shine. And then, you know, if you do, we don't leave very many cameras out, like out of state like that. But if guys like to do that a bunch, they can. So that's when, yeah, that's the probably the biggest thing. Like if we're going to a new area, just scouting on a long weekend trip is gonna increase your chances so much.
I agree 100%. Now, you know, you don't always have the time for it, but if you can make the time for it, it's just like, what, it doesn't really matter what time of year. Obviously, spring or like right before the season is preferred. Like, cause you guys went in like February or March is what I mean by spring, right?
Yep. Yeah.
So like you see a lot of, like, it's a lot easier to like track, like pattern the deer that way. But obviously nothing beats fresh sign, right?
Right.
September, you can go find the scrapes and, you know, find what the deer are doing at that minute. So that helps. So if you had your preference, would you go in the fall?
I would, yeah.
Yeah.
But now that I, you know, do more out west trips, it's really hard to go that time.
Yeah.
Because, you know, it's already so full, burning from, you know, a week and a half going out west, which is a great way to burn it. So, like, sure. It's been a year since I've done a September scouting trip.
Okay.
But that was probably the best. You know, we did it for Indiana a while ago, a few years ago. And it was, like, the most helpful. Because not only that, like, it's just fresh in your mind when you go back in a month or two, where
that's
it's
true.
Like, all right, I know what this is going to look like. And,
yep.
But the nice thing about going earlier, though, if you do a late winter, early spring, is, like, it's going to make your e-scouting that much more efficient in the summer. Because a lot of times, you know, half the battle is is crossing properties off the list, right?
Or areas where 100%. Like, okay,
this wasn't good because, you know, whatever, there's a lot of pressure there, or there was no undergrowth, there no sun, whatever it is, right?
You can cover a lot more ground.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I think that is nicer to go earlier. So that way, like, your e-scouting is more beneficial through the summer then.
Yeah.
Knowing, like, what areas you're going to really narrow in on overall.
That makes sense. That makes sense. So when you guys, last time you did the September scout, you said it was in Indiana. Did you guys have a lot of success on that hunt? And when were you going? Were you going November?
We were, we were going November, okay. And we did. That was our first year in Indiana. My brother Austin shot a really nice buck, and then Derek shot a great buck that trip as well. And let me think. Oh, and Brett did. Three out of six guys. We were 50%.
Pretty impressive.
We always do bow hunting on these trips, and 50% the first year was pretty impressive.
That's huge.
And all good bucks overall. And I had, two really close encounters. You know, I drew on a buck twice and didn't get a shot. So, you know, that close
to hunt.
That close to getting one as well, or getting a shot. And I'm 0-2 in Iowa. I've never shot. I've not flung an arrow. In Indiana.
Indiana.
I've not flung an arrow in Indiana, so I'm excited to go back this year.
Yeah, that's this year, same kind of area.
Yeah.
So, from what I'm taking from this is, like, ideally, if you have the time, if you have multiple long weekends, it'd be nice to go in, like, that February, March time frame, cross off what you need to cross off, target what you want to target, and ideally go back in early fall and confirm that, you know, what you want to target is worth targeting.
Right.
That's a lot for a non-resident hunt. I mean, I get that that's a lot, but some people have like, I look back at me in my early and mid-20s, I had all the time in the world in my hands. It's a different story now. And like you said, it's funny, growing up in, like, you know, in Michigan, hunting season started October 1, you know? And I didn't change that time, like, that mindset until just, like, a few years ago, where it's like, wow, I can actually go somewhere and hunt September 1. Yeah. Like, why haven't I been doing this? You know, come on, Dad, why didn't you do that when I was 12, you know? But, September, like, if you're not going on, like, a Western hunt, or you're not doing any sort of hunting in September, and, you know, your juices are flowing, like, if you have a weekend, go scout where you plan on hunting, you know? Right. Especially if it's close. Like, the nice thing is, like, yeah, Michigan, we get a lot of raft because we're not the best state to hunt in the Midwest, but you're close to all these really, really good whitetail states.
Yeah.
I mean, you're less than a 10-hour drive away from Iowa. You're less than 10 hours, like, a few hours to Ohio. You're a few hours to Indiana. Last year when I went to Wisconsin, it, like, took me 4.5 hours from my parking lot to the tree I sat in, and I saw, you know, I saw 150 the first night I was there. It's like, you can go find places that you can, like, if you leave on a Friday night for a scouting mission, you're there Friday night, and you have all weekend to scout. So that's what is nice, because, you know, New York gets a lot of, like, comparable, like, New York and Pennsylvania, very comparable to Michigan, a lot of hunters. Not a ton of huge whitetails, but just think, like, for them to drive to Iowa or Missouri, or, you know, they're on the road for 12, 14 hours.
Right.
Where we're pretty close to a lot of good whitetail states. And another state that's really close, that it's expensive, but it's top of mind for me lately, is Illinois. Mm-hmm. My dad lives next to a guy that hunts Illinois public land every single year with a bow. He's got the capability to, like, leave November 1st and not come home till he kills a buck. That's not all of us, but he kills good bucks every single year.
That's amazing.
It's interesting to hear, because, I feel like a lot of guys who, especially if you've never done a non-resident hunt, kind of don't know where to start, where to go. It doesn't take much. Like, there's so much online information, there's so many podcasts now, but it's always interesting to hear everybody's, like, you know, mindset and, like, how they choose the states they're going to. Obviously, sounds like Kansas would have been your first choice this year.
Yeah.
But, you know, you guys didn't draw, and you were going to Indiana either way, right?
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
And you guys still hunt, obviously, you still hunt in Michigan most of October. Tell me a little bit about this Idaho hunt.
So, yeah, going out with my dad, and my dad's got an elk tag, I got a mule deer tag, so it's going to be fun to have the split.
Yeah, that's a lot of fun.
I was going for the elk tag, but didn't get one, so it's going to be fun to split it up and go, and it's an area we've been to a few times, so okay. It's going to be fun to
is this like, the get same back to there. Area you guys killed that bull, your group killed that bull with Jack and then
yeah.
Years ago?
Nice. Yeah, same, nice. Where Derek got his yeah. Success, and we went last year. And had insane amount of close calls and interactions and did not come home with an elk. But which we have videos coming out soon from that.
Oh, you
we,
do? Nice.
We've been holding them. So we got some like videos that. Coming, holding them before the excitement of the season.
Do you think
so,
you'll like launch those videos in like August, September time frame?
Yeah. August is the goal. So it'll be nice. A few kind of late August, I think. Sweet. So, yeah, it should be
I good. Always like that. I always like that the hunting public, how they would wait to put out their elk videos until, you know, elk season was around the corner. You guys, is it just you and your dad going?
It is, yeah.
Wow,
some
that's
other
cool.
Guy, Derek was trying to go and some other guys, but didn't get a tag.
That so, Idaho situation is just crazy now. Like yeah. In 2019, not that long ago, you could go by, you can drive to Idaho and pull up to a Walmart and buy a tag.
Right,
you know?
Right, yeah.
Now you have to be on your computer and you got to hope your internet is like, on point so you can get in there and you know is that yeah. Like you so did you go on intending to buy an elk tag?
I did.
And then
yeah.
You just because you were too far down the line you had to grab a mule deer tag.
Exactly. So that was my backup.
Nice.
Just get a tag in my pocket and
yeah
go.
Do you guys
so,
run into a lot of mule deer on that hunt last year?
Yeah, a decent amount.
Did
not
you?
A ton of bucks, you know.
Yeah.
A lot of does and a lot of smaller bucks, but a few decent bucks. But
like,
nothing
you're
like
not gonna be too picky, you know, right?
No.
Yeah.
Oh no, I never shot a mule deer, but you know, talking about filming though, I mean filming is so easy for whitetail compared to mountain.
It's a whole other story.
Filming is so tough. So you know, hiking around, trying to make it all happen, trying to film. It's a whole other game trying
it
to
is.
Film that. Nearly impossible to self film, but some guys do it. But,
do they like it's gotta be like a GoPro on a bow. Like I just
yeah.
can't I guess if you're sitting over a wallow or a water hole, but like,
yeah,
that just that's tough, man.
I mean Remy Warren's probably the most like well known like self filmer. Like, I don't know how the guy does it. It's amazing
insane.
What he pulls off and gets on camera.
It is
and, like,
it's insane
in the trips that he does. So yeah. So that's a big. I'm excited to get those videos out. Excited to go back. You know that one and then
yeah
just that in Indiana for us.
So let me ask you this: in the coming years, do you have any? Are there other states that are like you guys have been like itching to go to and haven't yet that are like kind of top of mind? Like, have, like in the next few years, I definitely want to give this state a shot.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, we got some like points brewing and stuff for like out west hunts, but overall, like for whitetail, there's always more to want to hunt.
There
you
is,
know? Like,
man.
You mentioned a few of them that are on my like radar of like Missouri is on my radar, Illinois. Be cool to hunt in Kentucky. I used to live in Kentucky when I was younger, so be cool to hunt in Kentucky.
I like that idea. I have a list on my phone. I have it in my notes, like states I have to whitetail hunt, which like I'm only gonna cross half of them off in my lifetime, right? But
yeah.
Like you know, I went out. I've been on a couple rifle hunts in Nebraska, and that was a blast. And the whole time I'm there, I'm like, I would die to bow hunt this. It does get a lot of pressure from what I hear. I'll definitely go back to Wisconsin. Should pull Iowa next year, maybe in 2 years.
Nice.
And then, yeah, I want to get Illinois, Kentucky. I mean, where you've hunted and where I've hunted in Ohio, you're only like a stone's throw from the Kentucky line anyway, right?
Right.
So yeah, there's still a lot of states that like it's like I've traveled and hunted a lot, but it's just like that's what's fun about it is, and you gotta do it now because who knows what it's gonna look like in 10 years? You
right.
know, when I started hunting Ohio, it was $125,
yeah.
And now it's still one of the more cost effective states, but it's getting the 300 range.
Yeah.
And Missouri's gone, like everything's gone up since I started hunting out of state, and it hasn't been that long. So it's like in 10 years. well, non-resident tag under $500 even exist?
Right.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, that's
and,
so true.
And down the road, I want to take my kids, and it's like, well, does a DIY hunt turn into a $3,000 hunt? You know what I mean? So, yeah, it's kind of gives me anxiety thinking about what the future of non-resident hunting is, but enjoy it while you can, right?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So anything else you wanted to... like mentioned, yeah, obviously, go watch the Foxtrot videos. You guys put down awesome productions. You guys have hunts in like Michigan, Kansas. Did you guys do Ohio? Do you have Ohio hunts?
We got Ohio out there. We got Indiana, Iowa. Yeah, Iowa hunts out there.
Seen the Iowa one. And then you're gonna. When's the next time you'll get to pull Iowa?
Probably 2 years from now.
2 years.
So yeah, looking like 2025, maybe 2026. So
it's, you know what, we got 5 minutes here. What's that like? I'm excited about Iowa. Like, is it all it's cracked up to be? And do you like not want to come back to Michigan?
It is. Like the amount of sign you see is unbelievable.
Yeah,
it is
even on public.
Like even on public, like we were on all public land.
Yeah,
and we just couldn't believe it. Like you know usually. When we go on trips, we're, you know, a lot of guys are scouting all day the first day.
Yeah.
And, like, usually the first day we come back on these trips, and we're like, oh, yeah, I found a few scrapes and this and that.
Yeah.
And, like, the first day in Iowa, everyone's like, dude, I found a rub the size of my thigh, and there were 17 of them, and then this community scrape was the side of my truck, you know, my truck hood, and, like, and just the amount of tracks and sign was unbelievable. And, like, it's just a perfect habitat, perfect situation. And,
yep.
You know, so yeah, it is what it's cracked up to be. Like it's, you know, as soon as the hunt was over, we were excited to go back and start the process. And it's a long wait, but it's worth it.
Yeah. So what were you seeing a lot of bucks too?
Yeah.
Actually in stand. Yeah.
Yeah, a lot. And that was the hardest part as like a, you know, a Michigan hunter. Like
it's my worst fear.
Like I would never pass up a 120.
Never. That's my biggest fear is not being able to, you know what I mean?
And that was the hardest thing is like having some, you know, decent bucks come through and like deciding, you know, on gosh, am I shooting this or not? And like, I didn't have any that were like really on the, like I had a handful of, you know, 8 points that were just, you know, maybe 3-year-old eights that were, you know,
coming
through that I'm like, any other state, I'm shooting that. Any other state, I'm shooting that. But I just, you know, held out. And
that kind of adds to the fun of it, though, right?
Like,
that's like, all right, this is Iowa.
You're there to hunt. Yeah, I mean, almost everyone at least saw a good Iowa buck.
Really? You know? Like, what's considered a good Iowa buck?
I mean, for me, and people will probably like, you know.
No, for me, this is going to be
like,
me.
I mean, for us, like, I mean, anything over like, you know, 135, 130 is like, oh yeah, that thing looks like an absolute giant.
Yeah.
You know, we're used to seeing it. So, but, yeah. And like, I mean, the buck that it's still haunts me. I had a great shot at a great buck, a great, beautiful 10 point. And, you know, hard to say, but from the footage, it was a 150 plus, like, and you can see the footage
and you
can see it pretty easily. Buck a lifetime for sure.
Yeah.
And like, so I got the true, you know, chance at Iowa Giant and didn't quite capitalize. But
it's a nice thing is you can always go back.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So
it's funny. Remember my Iowa experiences. Well, first of all, I have a feeling that I would go there and shoot the first 125 I saw and be like, do you even show this off around here? Or do you hide it? You know? But, so my two Iowa experiences is one time when we were hunting in Missouri, we were actually in the northwest corner of Missouri and we were in an Airbnb that was actually in Iowa. So like our drive to the Missouri property was only like 15 miles, but we were on that southern border of Iowa. And I remember we were at a gas station that was like connected to a deer processor. And this farmer comes up and he has this 170-inch buck in the back of his truck. Like, you know, freak. And the only thing he said was, I got to hurry up and get back. And there's a 190 back there. I'm like, what world is this? You know, like if I shoot a 170, I'm celebrating for 4 days, you know, 4 months. Yeah. Like he's in a hurry to get back to his stand. And the second experience was on November 15th. So the 1 year I missed the Michigan opener was because I was driving to Nebraska for their rifle opener.
Okay.
And so we were driving through Iowa all day on November 15th. And my dad and I were just in awe. Like, we're just like, we saw a dozen giants just like driving, you know, like running in fields, chasing does. And it's like, you could drive around the state of Michigan for your whole lifetime and not see what we saw. Inches of antler that we saw today. It's like, oh, you know, it takes 5 years to hunt it on purpose, right?
Yeah.
Because if it was every, you know, second year that you could go out there in November, it would look like Missouri. Right. You know, a lot of good bucks, but a lot of hunters, you know? So, but, well, yeah, I'm excited, man. I'm
excited for your trip. That's
yeah.
Awesome.
Yeah, yeah. I'm excited too. We're indecisive about public or private. We do have a kind of an in where you pay like a trespassing fee, like a 1 week lease. I'm not afraid to say this because the guy doesn't listen to this podcast. The guy who runs the whole operations, I won't say too much, but it's like, you know what? I see how much success people have out there in public land and being able to like go out there and scout, like if we were to be hunting like a piece of private, you don't have that opportunity.
Yeah.
So like if you're only going to be able to do it once every 6 years, might as well make the most of it. Make a trip out there scouting, you know, and if you don't fill a bow tag right away, maybe go back, you know, and hunt, like, if you have a free weekend, really, because it's really not that bad of a drive. So
I did that. We went early November, and then I did not fill my tag, and then I went back the weekend before Thanksgiving. And
did you?
By myself. I drove out and hunted for 3 days and didn't see much that trip.
No.
Didn't have success, but it was like, I'm, you know.
Those solo trips are fun, man.
They are. They are. You got, and, like, you got to, if I can do it, got to do it.
Yep.
Because you only get that chance every few years or 5+ years.
Amen.
You got to do it. So.
So true. Well, hey, Carl, thanks for hopping on the podcast. It was fun, man. If anybody has any takeaways from this, you know, at least try filming your hunts if you haven't before. It's fun for all the reasons we mentioned, but like the memories and just being able to look over your shot might be the difference between an unrecovered deer and a recovered deer, right?
So true.
So, and then go watch the Foxtrot videos if you want to be entertained. It's that time of year, man. Everybody's getting fired up. Everybody's watching hunting videos. So,
exactly.
Yeah.
Thanks for having me on. Appreciate
yeah,
it.
Yeah, absolutely, man. We'll do it again.
Sounds good.
Thanks. All right, that was a really fun discussion with Carl Ream. Really informative, especially on the self-filming side, listening to, you know, the hurdles he's had to jump through, but at the same time, all the benefits of filming your hunts, and also learned a thing or two and how he goes about planning and getting ready for those out-of-state hunts each and every year. But as always, we're going to finish the episode with a prayer. So we're going to bow our heads now. God, thank you for taking on all of my sins, and thank you for paying the penalty for my mistakes on my behalf. I don't deserve the kind of love, but I am so grateful for it. Thank you for daily showing me what it means to be loved by you. You are so worthy to be praised. You are so good to me. In Jesus' name, amen. Hope you guys enjoyed the episode. Again, hit that subscribe button. Leave us a review, whether it's on Apple Podcasts or Spotify. I'd really appreciate it. Live for Jesus, y'all. Have a good one.